Hey, this is Bootstrap Web. Back at it. Jordan, how's it going, man?
Brian Castle, how are you, my friend?
Doing okay. You know, the ups and downs.
the roller coaster.
That's right. One month is great. One month is tough. The next month is great. That's how this goes, you know?
One day, one hour.
Exactly. It's Friday. It's beautiful outside. And I'm going to try to keep pushing along here. So,
as Lord Peter Baelish would say, the climb is all there is. It's all about the climb.
That's right. Game of Thrones is back.
It's back. All right, cool. Look, we got some things to cover. We haven't spoken in maybe 2 weeks or so. Look forward to catching ourselves up on things, kind of exploring some issues, things that are coming up, some things that kind of identified as cool things that I want to share that we've been doing. So where do you want to start, my man?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like on my end, the one thing in terms of updates, I'll just talk about getting back into the swing of things with Ops Calendar, some thoughts around that. But then, you know, if time allows, I thought maybe I'd grab a couple of articles that I've just been reading that are kind of random, just about other stuff out there in the world that I think is... It caught my interest, so maybe we'll just talk about something that's not related to the usual updates. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's one article in particular by Justin Jackson that I'd love to go into.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Cool, man.
So why don't we start it off? Like, what do you want to start with?
So first, I just want to, you know, we often talk about things that we find difficult, right? The things that are easy and then working, it's worth exploring or at least sharing what or why we think it worked for us so that other people can learn from it and kind of gain the experience without having to go through it. Oftentimes we end up talking about like the problems, what we're struggling with. I do want to take a second to just share like a win, just a straightforward win. I had like a career highlight last week. You know, it was one of those moments where you like stop and reflect and, you know, some emotion. It was just kind of intense, man. I got invited to an event. So these two guys put on an e-commerce event teaching people their system for e-commerce. And the way they teach their system with a landing page and Shopify, only Carthook, that we're the only product in the market that connects landing pages into Shopify. So before the event, they sent out an email to all 150 of their attendees saying, before you come here, make sure you have Carthook set up. So this one event drove 150 signups. And then, of course, they wanted me to go. So I did like a two-hour presentation in front of a room full of 150 people, all logged in and using Carthook all at the same time.
That's ridiculous.
It was a trip, man. It was a trip. You know, thank God for AWS. Whatever the hell you cost, thank you. It's worth it. So I did the presentation, and I went to the back of the room, and I just got a picture of just, you know, the guy up on stage with the Carthook app, you know, on display, and then just 150 laptop screens all open to the app. I was like, wow, man, it was a trip, man.
All right,
was,
that's, you know, that's ridiculous. Like, how did that happen? How did it come about?
They started using the product themselves. Then they introduced it
just randomly. Like they found it just randomly.
They found it because people want to use our product when they send traffic to a landing page, most often in ClickFunnels, but they still want the order to go into Shopify. We're the only product that allows you to do that bridge. And so that's how they run their traffic. So they started using our product, introduced it to their mastermind of like 8 people. All 8 of those people signed up and they're having success with it. So they said, when we do this big event, we want to teach this system. So I became friends with them and, you know, now they're like VIP customers and now obviously they're VIP affiliate partners. You know, I was there personally. So it was like a little bit of my own experience, but it was very much me as a representation for the work of, you know, 5 people for a long time. So I kind of sent that picture out to everybody and was like, guys, what we're doing has an effect in the real world. You know, like we took it from this thing that we conceived and we all kind of put our effort on it and it is real. It is real.
That's beautiful, man. Congrats. You know, and it's like to literally see in the flesh 150 people sitting there who fly to some place to talk about how they are like really seeing results in their business. And you know, your product is a key piece of that. I mean, that's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, it was a trip. So that was just a win, you know, and it's not boasting, but it felt really good. It's important to acknowledge, you know, you put a lot of work in and you talk to people over the phone and on a computer, but there are people out there using our products, right? And they're trying to make their lives better, their families better, their income, their business, whatever it is, it does have an effect out there.
Absolutely.
Like meeting people at conferences is amazing in person. Same goes for emails here. You know, I love hearing from people over email, you know, Twitter, but you know, I'll get a lot of email feedback and I just feel like for everyone out there who's using something, whether it's a product or you've read a blog post or you heard a podcast or you've bought a course or whatever, take an extra second to shoot that person an email and just be like, look, your thing actually resulted in this change in my life, in my business. Like that's what business owners really, really want to hear. Like you think that like, oh, they're on some podcast or on some email list that like, they're so big, they get 1,000 of these emails a day. Like, no, that's not true. And the ones that really inspire them the most are just to say thank you and to actually show them, hey, this is what happened to me thanks to your thing. So take the extra moment to do that. It's awesome.
How about you, man? What do you got going on?
I think I'll just start with one of these articles that caught my attention. So everybody knows that Amazon bought Whole Foods a couple weeks ago. I'm a fan of Amazon. I'm a fan of Whole Foods. This is kind of exciting news for, you know, everyone. I read this article from Ben Thompson. He runs the blog Stratechery.
Strategery, something like that.
Yeah, it's, and this guy is an awesome writer. I've only kind of become a fan of his in the last couple of months, but he basically takes whatever's happening in tech news and writes really in-depth strategic analysis on the latest tech news, basically. So he wrote this article. This is back on June 19th. He wrote this called Amazon's New Customer, and just really walking through this. I just love this stuff like this. Like this, why did Amazon choose to buy Whole Foods? Right. Like, what is the strategy? What is their big master plan there? So the article, like, it's called Amazon's New Customer, and so the idea is that if you think about how Amazon has evolved over the years. So obviously it started with like selling books and then selling all sorts of products. And then they started to really make a lot of money with AWS, their cloud services. So there's like two big buckets of how they make money. There's like the cloud services, AWS. The other big one is these fulfillment centers, letting third-party e-commerce sellers, you know, use their fulfillment centers to sell, right? And the way that those were successful was that Amazon itself was the first and best biggest customer for AWS. And then they were their first and best biggest customer for these fulfillment centers. Like it was like selling their byproduct. Like AWS was like, you know, hey, they were like, hey, we've got all these cloud servers and all these cloud services that we happen to be using just for our own site to, you know, and we're paying for it for Amazon. We might as well sell this to other people. So like them being the first best customer allowed them to like self-fund in a way and then scale up that side of the business. And then same thing with the fulfillment centers. You know, we have to build out all these fulfillment centers because we sell stuff. Other people can do it too. And because we're the biggest customer on it, we can pump so much resources and money into it, right?
So right, get the economies of scale, get the better shipping rates from the carriers because it's all coming from the same place. And
exactly. Okay. So then you look at Amazon Fresh, which they've been trying to get off the ground for the last couple of years. They're trying to dabble in this like grocery business, but that's been kind of falling flat for them because they were missing that first best customer. Like Amazon themselves did not, they were just trying to dabble in this thing and see where it can go.
They didn't build out the system themselves.
And yeah, like they weren't
their efficiencies and lend them out effectively.
Exactly. They weren't able to make that a byproduct of something that they were already doing anyway. So by buying Whole Foods,
just shortcut, force it.
It's like now we have this massive grocery stores business that needs the funds and resources to grow. And now using that, like making Whole Foods their first best customer for this whole thing, they can then build it out into even more, you know, services.
That's an exciting thing. Well, my wife and I talk about it all the time. There's no way we are shopping for groceries 5 years from now the same way that we do now. And it is a horrific, horrible, inefficient process right now. Going to the store, dragging three kids, clamoring and throwing things at you is so much pain. And we've tried delivery services and it's just not there yet. So the prospect of Amazon's power and process and discipline combined with Whole Foods quality, it's like, all right, take my money.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, just, obviously that's a massive scale, but just on a much more minuscule scale, I was thinking about, like, you know, my own business and how I'm moving into this Ops Calendar SaaS product, which never would have come about if I wasn't already doing the Audience Ops content service. And we're already using Ops Calendar in our service for our clients. And so I look at our service as like that first best customer. We're designing the product for ourselves. We're built, like, even if we don't sell it to any other customers, we still need it for ourselves. It's that it's self-funding, but also like the ability to pump those resources into a new product like that, because you're already using it anyway. You know?
Yeah. And to understand the intricacies of what the product needs, right? That's where it's hard to do it on your own. Hence the whole lean process and customer development and so on. Because if you aren't building it for yourself and you don't have direct experience, you know, and I assume a lot of product owners and companies in our space, there's a thread that runs through historically, right? My thread goes from starting an e-commerce store to an abandoned cart app to the checkout process. There is a very, you know, common thread. I assume a lot of people had the same type of thing.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So what else on your end?
Let's see what I got. Okay. First, something really brief, like a little tip, or at least something that we've been doing, and then we can get into something slightly different. So one thing that I have seen, we hired a head of customer support, and Aaron is outstanding. He brings this very founder-like energy, where there's no like, just tell me what I'm supposed to do with my job and I'll do it. It's very proactive. So one of the things that he has been doing that has inspired all of us on the team to do more of is he just reaches out to other companies and just talks to them. So these aren't customers. They're not partners. These are just people who are in a similar situation. And these are like, they're counterparts in other companies that are doing the same thing. So here in Portland, he basically has been reaching out to other software companies that we like and admire and just gets their head of customer support on the phone or on a call or an in-person meeting and just asks them, how are you doing it? What's the evolution of how you started doing it? And how did you end up doing it the way you are right now? And he'll do that for several companies. And he just like amasses what in each conversation, it's like a year or two of pain to get to where they are right now. Trying this system, trying this software, trying this other method.
And is he recording these? Like, is this for content or is he just?
No, this is so we know how to handle it because we are we're in new territory, right? Every month is this new thing on how do we handle customer support is like the biggest focus right now in the company. It's customer experience, right? It's the documentation, the onboarding, the support, the tech support, the sales support. That it's just people signing up. That's one thing, but getting people to be successful. So all that customer experience stuff. So what it's done is it's kind of inspired other people in the company to do the same thing. So Ben has been talking to like product people at other companies, and I've talked to other founders, and all of us are like, yeah, we should just kind of get out of the building more because you learn these lessons faster.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like it.
Obviously, I've been a fan of mastermind groups. I think I met you originally through a mastermind group, and just in the past year, I the ones that I was in started to fizzle out, and I felt this just that void of like I'm not in mastermind groups right now. You know, I've been in and out. I've got like friends that I catch up with every now and then, but so I just recently joined one, and then I sent in a an application for this other one. But yeah, like it just felt that need to like connect with more people on a regular basis. It's like not that I'm looking for anything specific. It's just like I don't have that right now. I know that it's benefited me in the past,
right after the start.
Got to get it back going again.
Yep. The other thing, the theme, right, from my point of view as CEO, when I put on like the business hat of what I'm responsible for in the company, I remember Rob Walling. I remember his talk at MicroConf, and going back on the history of Drip, one of the themes that I noted in his talk that I remember to kind of keep an eye on was the fact that revenue in SaaS, revenue and expenses, they just climb in lockstep for a while. Right, as you get more revenue, you just need to spend more money on handling that level of customers. At some point, the efficiency of software starts to have a bigger impact where you can have a lot more revenue than expenses. But for a while, they grow in lockstep. I remember him describing that and saying to myself in the audience, I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen. And it is exactly what's happening.
You know, every SaaS that's grown to, you know, that starts to really take off, when I hear the stories about their expenses, I'm always like floored. Like, how does that even happen? Like,
right.
You know, and so I guess it's a combination of like server costs and people and like developers and customer
success. It's really just people.
Yeah.
Like the percentage of the budget that goes toward services, software, hosting, and so on just shrinks and shrinks and shrinks to the point of almost inconsequential.
Right. It's people.
But it's just people and salaries. And there is like...
But there's also like a speed aspect to it, right? Like it, especially when you're for like Drip, when you're in such a hyper competitive market, like you have to ship feature after feature as fast as humanly possible, which is why you need more developers. Whereas like I feel like, and I could be totally wrong about this, but like I feel like if you're not as in such a cutthroat competitive space, you can get by with a slower roadmap.
It seems to be, from what Rob said and from what I'm experiencing, that it is a conscious decision. You don't have to keep building new features. You can make more profit, but it's going to hurt you, right? It's going to hurt your potential. It's going to hurt how fast you can grow, how big you can grow, and the danger that you're putting yourselves in with competition. So it's your decision. If you want to just keep pushing and keep expenses in lockstep with revenue, you can definitely do that. Just keep hiring people. At some point in time, you know, and that's kind of what we're in the middle of right now. Right now, we're a team of six. We can handle X amount of revenue, you know, because that goes with X, Y amount of customers and so on. So I see us moving to like 8 or 10 people. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, once we get to 10 people, can we handle a disproportionate increase in revenue? So not a little more, but 3 or 4X in revenue because we have the systems and people in place. That's my hope. I sincerely.
You know, it comes to that question of like, when is something like feature complete? And I know that term feature complete will change from year to year as the market changes. But at the end of the day, like the core product exists for a certain reason. Like you can keep enhancing it. You could add extra features around the edges. But like the core reason why people buy it doesn't drastically change unless you're going to create a completely new product.
Yeah, I think it's a tough concept, and there's a million ways that it can, right, little factors that make it difficult to put your finger on. I mean, our cart abandonment app, we haven't really added a feature for about a year. You can call that feature complete because people use it, sign up, pay for it, get value out of it, and so on. But right now, in a competitive space with our checkout product, in my mind, there is so much more to build. Right, audience ops, you think about it, like, are you trying to get feature completeness or are you trying to get to like good enough and then, but you still know that you do need these other features?
Well, so like with Ops Calendar, as of right now, I think it's like 50 or 60% to that point in my mind currently that I would consider like feature complete. And 50 or 60% is certainly good enough to start selling it to customers. And we have some paying customers on it already. Yeah.
I just signed up this week.
I saw that.
My credit card come through? Yep.
Thank you. Yep. but I've already noticed like during the development of this stuff that like when I have 10 features that I want to build in a month and I only have one developer, 10 features are not going to get built in the month. Like there's just no way. Even once we like, you know, hustle and bootstrap our way up to 80%, 90% feature complete, and we don't have any like big features to build anymore, I think the next big expense people wise will be just performance. Like the version of it now, like we're going to have to rebuild it at some point, or just refactor under the hood at some point once it reaches a certain, you know.
Yeah, we've done that. I think three times.
Yeah. at some point that's going to be a massive expense just in time and people.
You know? Right. But I guess you only undertake that after it's proven itself as a sellable product. Yeah, that's what you think. But Ben and I have trouble with this on a principle level. At a base principle, he and I disagree a lot because and I can acknowledge that his way is the right way, right? He wants to build only what will basically make people sign up and what makes people leave, right? He wants to build as little as possible. And in theory, that sounds right. The problem is, what do you do when you know what the market wants? So I feel very much like I know what an e-commerce merchant that's very focused on marketing, I know what they want. They don't just want our product. They want additional templates. They want A/B testing. That's what I would want. But from Ben's point of view, the person responsible for building the product, it's no, I want to put in as little as possible because the more we build, the more surface area we have to deal with.
The more to maintain.
Right. And so it's like this, we call it a healthy tension. How's that for a nice way to describe it?
Well, like for that example, I mean, templates, like, is that a common request?
It's pretty common. A/B testing, very, very common. More reporting, very common, things like that. And right now people they're signing up. So does that mean you shouldn't build it? It's like, you should, but it's almost like in what order and at what scope?
Yeah. So, but it is also tough around like people may be asking for it, but will they put their money where their mouth is? Like there was a while with Restaurant Engine. I'm not even sure whether or not this was the right move or not, but like I definitely stopped creating new design templates like pretty early on. Like I think I launched with two or three and then eventually grew it to like six, and that was by like year two. And then like for year three and four, like we still had six and that was it. And like even of those six, like everybody chose like just two of them, like our most popular two. I was like, well, all these customers kind of want our most popular themes. Like I don't see a need to grow a massive library.
Right. It's tough. It's I don't know. It's a trade-off.
Yeah.
I want to build what people want because, I don't know. that's what makes sense to me.
I guess, I guess like to Ben's point, it's like, are those things, like, will they actually result in more signups? Like, are people starting a free trial and not converting because there weren't enough templates? You know?
I think so. Yep.
Yeah.
It's hard because when it comes to product, I'm not the expert on the team, but I am the expert in what the market wants. So
maybe you could test it by like not building it, but advertising it. And like I was thinking like you could make it an upgrade, like pay an extra X dollars a month to get A/B testing and just see how many people click and like try to opt in for that and then say, oh, wait, it's not ready yet.
I saw one company recently just flat out just send a message to all their customers and say, should we build this? And then they just suggested the feature and said, we've heard requests for this. We're considering building it. What do you guys think? Should we build it? And I'm sure they got a bunch of feedback.
Yeah.
What else, brother?
So, you know, like speaking of Ops Calendar, I think I may have talked last time about how, okay, I'm starting to kind of at least plan on ramping back into developing it and getting it out there. I think a month ago, I still had the mindset of like, okay, I'm really going to do more of a push like late 2017. But now I'm thinking like, let's go even faster and push now.
Okay. Can you dig into that a little bit?
So, you know, I mean, Audience App Service is, you know, chugging along. It does what it does. I just recently grew the team by a lot. And I'm now at the tail end of that whole really crazy hectic period of training new people and all that. So they're all kind of settling in, and now we have a lot more capacity in Audience App Service. I am doing a few things around like driving more leads and to the service and whatnot. I've got a big content push coming out in the next few weeks there. But the ultimate goal is to get Ops Calendar launched with more customers and to break even and then to profitability. I mean, the main goal that I have in mind is break even. Like get it to a point where I don't have to cut out profit from Audience Ops Service to fund the development of Ops Calendar.
Right. That's base camp one on the climb.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the most painful and frustrating climb because I'm not funded. It's completely self-funded, and the progress on Ops Calendar all depends on the health of Audience Ops Service, basically. There have been ups and downs in the service, so I've had to kind of slow down progress on Ops Calendar. Now, kind of moved past that and in a much better place to start self-funding again. And now it's just a matter of, well, first I have to wait like another about 6 weeks for my developers to free up again because they took on other projects. So we're saying early September, they're going to start coding again on Ops Calendar. Between now and then, I am designing the interface for a few more key features, specifically geared towards agencies, being able to better communicate with clients through the Ops Calendar interface to say, like, here's a piece of content. Does it have your approval? Do you have edits for it? And kind of have like an official approval system, which we've had a lot of requests for, and we would certainly use in our service as well. The other big piece that we're going to develop is, so actually we already have this in place, a performance tracking, right? So and this was actually my mistake. This is probably a similar back and forth that you've had with Ben, but a different.
Okay. About whether you need it or not.
Not that, just the approach, the way that we implemented it. So we have this performance tracking feature, which basically allows you to install a tracking code on your website and track traffic, page views, entry visits, and conversions on a post-by-post basis. So you can go down your calendar, click on an article, and see how many people viewed this particular article and how many people who viewed that article also converted. And you can have all these custom conversions. And my thought early on, and the way that it actually still exists today, is that like, hey, let's build our own tracking pixel and our own traffic recording.
Right, as opposed to like playing into Google Analytics.
Exactly, as opposed to integrating with Google Analytics. And my developer rightfully pushed back on me pretty early on. He's like, you know, we could do all this with Google Analytics. I just didn't believe that the integration would be as seamless as I hoped it would be, right? Like I was, because I haven't really seen many other apps like really seamlessly integrate with Google Analytics to a point where it's like where you click a button, you're connected, and then it's just like sucking data from Google Analytics and putting it into your own interface. I kind of thought that wasn't really possible, right?
Okay. I haven't seen that either.
And so I was like, you know, I don't want to just like iframe Google Analytics or any bullshit like that inside our app. Like so I was like, let's just build our own. And so he found like a framework for to do some shortcuts
and all that.
Yeah. So we built that, and then we had like 20 clients on it tracking their traffic, like 20. And the thing was already slowing down to like a screeching halt, you know, because we're tracking like all these website hits and then connecting those hits to conversions. And it's, you know, once we got into the thick of it and actually stood it up and got it running, I was like, oh yeah, I see now how complex. I mean, he built it. You know, like it's all built out and it's actually working. And we got through the complexity. We had a lot of back and forth on it. But then once we got it all built, putting it out there in the wild, the performance just killed us. So long story short, we're going to switch to the Google Analytics integration. That'll be a kind of a big overhaul of that feature, but it'll be much better from a performance standpoint. All that stuff is offloaded to Google's servers, and I'm so stupid because like I've had that request from customers like, oh, can it integrate with Google Analytics? And it's better because like when you sign up for it, you'll be able to get all your historic data into Ops Calendar.
Yeah, you know? and less surface area for you to maintain.
Yeah, yeah. And the other day I found this like WordPress plugin that integrates Google Analytics in like a really, really seamless way. And I was like, oh man, like they did it, you know. If they could do it in that WordPress plugin, it can be done by us.
I hear you. We've made those mistakes a bunch of times. It requires a philosophy to stand by. That's the truth. It requires our first option, if it's not 100% core to what we do, our first option will be to integrate with the big player in the field. And then beyond that is the question.
Yeah. But the main thing that I need to focus on now is like, aside from planning these features, I'm going to do a bit of that work and then the developers are going to get going, but I need to get moving on marketing and sales. And we still have the beta group of customers. We have our clients on Audience App Service using it. And a lot of them are like really actively using it too. So that's pretty cool.
That's good.
And then we have like a couple of other new customers who've just found us. Like I don't even know them. They just found the site and signed up.
That's good. Stranger.
And so that's been kind of cool. I mean, not a high volume, you know, like a handful, but I've been doing zero to market it. Right.
Right. If you want to get the snowball rolling downhill, the first few turns are going to require effort.
Exactly. So I need to start, just talking to more customers, you know, scheduling a lot more calls just to pick the brains and feel like what are the most important features that you're looking for in this sort of tool. I've been having a lot of conversations about our top competitor. There's one that just keeps popping up and I want to really understand like why people are frustrated with that. I mean, I've tried it and I was frustrated with it too. So,
I like those situations a lot.
Yeah.
We live off that.
Yeah. Like so over 50% have mentioned this name and they come in and
right. They're bringing some,
they're like actively looking for a better solution. That's how they found it. I need to have more of those conversations. I need to kind of update, not redesign the marketing site, but like update some of the copy and some of the, to highlight the new features. The other thing that I want to do is like record these, like 2-minute videos. Each one just focused on a specific feature and the pain point that feature solves.
Yeah, I like that version of marketing. These just show to me already. Every single one of our images on our marketing page for the checkout product was intended as a temporary image to be replaced with a video. And we haven't done the video.
right. And I was thinking like I would actually take these videos and use them out like elsewhere. Like I would go into forums and somebody's asking about how do you like automatically schedule tweets and Facebook posts like in a better way than Buffer. Like I could reply with, oh, we have a video about that, you know?
Right. It's a content asset you can use other places.
It's not one of these like super simple SaaS tools that like just does one thing really well. There's really like 5 or 6 different key benefits to the thing. There's like 5 or 6 really painful aspects of planning a content calendar and tracking it and automating social media and you know, automating the process and all that. So, and like each one of those things, like I've explained each one of those things separately to other people, other like content marketers, and they're like, oh, that's what I've been looking for, you know, but they've had that reaction to like 4 or 5 separate things. So I can't like jumble all that in like one landing page or one video. I want to market these separate features as if they're like focused micro SaaS, but they're really all features in the same tool.
Yeah. Yeah. We struggle with that same thing. We don't know which feature to highlight first.
I think that's, well, first of all, I think more SaaS, I know Heat and Shah has talked about this. More SaaS are going in this direction of like, you do have to incorporate
a bunch of stuff,
a more complete solution. just because of competition and all that. But
well, people have 25 different software subscriptions, and there is a very special version of joy in the world where you can cancel one tool because a tool that you already have does the same thing.
I've had those conversations.
Satisfaction of like, oh, now I can get rid of X.
I've had those exact conversations with beta people and others. Like when I ask them flat out, like, what do you think about, you know, $150 to $200 a month for this? Like, how does that fit with your budget? They're like, out loud, they're doing the math. They're like, well, I could cancel this tool. I'm paying $79 for that. I could also cancel that tool. I'm already paying $100 for that. So yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, you know?
Yep. Yep. Same here. That's good to know. You know, those might be the valuable features, but those also tend to be not the central feature, right? It's something that you happen to do that another tool does that they can get rid of. But for you, it might not be the primary feature. It might be part of, right? For you guys, I assume a typical use case is being able to cancel Buffer.
Yeah. Buffer and Edgar.
Right. Yeah. So, but your tool doesn't specifically, it's not a social scheduling tool. Social scheduling is part of the whole approach and strategy.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, it is a social scheduling tool, but it's not primarily that, you know? And so that's what I'm talking about. It's like, it solves some frustrating issues with social scheduling, especially when you're doing social scheduling to promote a content calendar. And so I think that the way to approach that from a marketing standpoint is like, you'll have your standard homepage marketing site to kind of highlight the key benefits, but then either on like maybe separate smaller landing pages, plus these like social media videos, blog posts, make those hyper-focused around one key feature, right? Like we'll have one page dedicated to like a better social scheduling calendar or something like that. And like one built around like, smarter automated content marketing checklists. You know, that's a big one. And another big one for us is this performance tracking, the Google Analytics. Like finally, like you get your Google Analytics on a article by article basis laid out in your calendar. It's like a separate message to communicate.
Yeah. It's it requires an understanding of what solution you're solving overall. It sounds like, you know, Buffer fixes just the scheduling piece, but for your audience and your ideal customer, the scheduling piece is as a result of the actual content creation and promotion.
Yeah. Like the pain point that solves that I want to get across in a little video is like when we have to push an article back by 2 days last minute, we already had Buffer scheduled tweets that are going to go out too early. And then we accidentally post a broken link.
Yes.
This thing automatically prevents that, you know, like yeah. That's like problem solved. Like, and I want to just put that across in a simple video, you know?
That's the hard part. The hard part is how do you have that conversation? I don't think there's anything nearly as good as video to convey that in an appropriate amount of time, right? No one's going to stare at your copy and image for 90 seconds, but they will watch your video for 90 seconds.
Right. Right. But yeah, I got to get that rolling. And I mean, even just more conversations just to figure out like which ones to focus on first, and then just start experimenting with leads. You know, how do I get more? Because I know that's going to take several months to get rolling. So, just got to get that back up and running. And
hook you up with two guys in Canada that just giving stuff out left and right. Do a little affiliate promotion for you.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, so I think the last thing before. I got a boogie for a sales call. Mm-hmm. Justin Jackson wrote a very interesting article. I think everyone should read about the actual buyer's journey, not what the person selling the software or the product thinks the person is going through on their buyer journey, but what it actually looks like. So I read it at just the right time where we internally were going through a similar buying process. We use Intercom for support, but then we're overwhelmed with the volume because chat encourages conversation and chat also gives off an expectation of immediacy. So you can't have a chat button that the person says, hey, I have a quick question, and then you don't respond for 24 hours, right? That's not okay. So we, to try to handle the volume, we moved over to Zendesk. So it's more of an email experience instead of a chat. People were not happy with that. We're not happy with it either. So we're going back to Intercom, but we found an app called Front App that takes your inboxes and puts it into like a unified inbox for everyone, for your entire team. So Intercom chat can come in, emails can come in, right? Email to support at CardHook, orders at CardHook, billing at CardHook. You can have, it's like different folders. It's just this unified inbox for the entire team to use. So our journey of how to go from Intercom into Zendesk, out of Zendesk, back to Intercom, but with a layer of Front App was, you know, it's like a month long journey. I think I heard about Front App like because they raised money and they have some cool story or something. But Justin's article kind of touched on all these little tiny things that even put a service or a product in your mind to begin with. And then all of a sudden you have the need for it and you remember them and you come back and you try it. And how's the sign-up experience? It all goes into this crazy decision-making process that's impossible to define.
Totally.
I'm pretty sure you and I reviewed WP Pusher.
That's that right.
Website. Yeah. So we'll take a little credit right there. So
exactly. Yeah. we made them who they are. No.
That Peter, I think the founder is cool as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of those things, like it solves a painful problem. Like I don't actually use it. But Justin had that issue or he prefers to use Git when he updates his WordPress theme. That's the thing that solves that problem. That's really painful if you work that way, you know? Yeah, and it's awesome, you know. And I think about that customer journey, and that was a really great write up by Justin. But the customer journey thing is so important to really get inside their mind but also really understand all of your touch points. I mean, if you think about like a few months back, I was also experimenting with Intercom and Drift, which in some ways they kind of compete. They're, they've got some different features, but
yeah, the Jackies.
And I've been a fan of their podcast, David Cancel and what's it called? Seeking Wisdom, which is a really, really good podcast. That's how I first came across their product, Drift, right? They're kind of like the newcomer to the space. Intercom has been around for a while. And a few months ago, I tried them both. And then I ended up, I think at the time, a few months ago, Drift was... it was still developing and it was missing a few key features that Intercom had. So I tried them both and then I went with Intercom for a while. And then I definitely hit up that same problem that you had, just too many incoming inquiries. And then I kind of turned it off, went back to my regular form and email, no more chat for a few more months. And now just last week, I get an email from Drift. I guess I'm on their email list. Tell me about like some new improved version of their bot, right? And I'm like, huh, you know, I do need to grab more leads off the homepage of Audience Ops. I know we're getting a lot of traffic there. Not enough people are filling out the form. Maybe because we have like an 8-question form on there. If I can convert it to just live, like a chat where that could at least start that process.
Yeah.
But if I did that and it's just a pure chat, I'm going to get too many unqualified inquiries. So maybe I could slap Drift on there, put the bot up to kind of pre-qualify, and then it gets to me. That's the thinking. I haven't actually set that up yet, but it's like that journey. Like,
right, you're on your way there.
Yeah,
a failed free trial with them is actually part of the buying journey if you look at it in the aggregate.
Yeah, like I'm pulling for them, right? Because I'm a fan of them. I'm a fan of their podcast. I am a fan of the product. I'm just not using it yet. And it didn't really work for me the first time. And now a few months later, it's like, huh, this could be a good excuse for me to give them another shot. You know, it's like I want to use it. I want it to be there. And, you know,
yeah,
I think there's a few products out there like that.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, I'm pretty sure you and I could go on like this until our voices are sore.
Yep.
It's Friday. It's 4:47 p.m. for you on the East Coast. It's time.
It is.
Shut it down.
It's bureau clock over here, yeah, for sure.
It sounds right to me.
Yep.
All right, brother.
All right.
Good to catch up. Everyone, thanks for listening in. Talk to all of you soon.
Have a good one.
See you.